everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. Together, a big hearty welcome to the Buckmaster program as we wrap up the month of January. Today is Tuesday, the final day of January, January 31st, 2023. Our program, now in its 13th year, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Tucson broadcast complex, one of four stations here on site. 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, along with kvoi.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Well, we have all been marveling at those incredible images sent back from NASA's James Webb Space Telescope, which was launched a little over a year ago. Launch was Christmas Day in 2021. A team from the University of Arizona built the near-infrared camera, or NIRCam, that's on board Webb. One of the top goals was to image the first stars and galaxies to form after the Big Bang. Now, Webb is getting closer to that very ambitious goal. Joining us on the live line, Dr. Marcia Rieke. Dr. Rieke is the NIRCam principal investigator and a University of Arizona Regents professor of astronomy, and the Dr. Elizabeth Romer endowed chair in Stewart Observatory. Dr. Rieke, how are you?
I am great and staying great because of all the wonderful data we're getting.
Pretty exciting stuff. I mean, the telescope's capturing some images from the most distant galaxies ever seen. How far back are we seeing galaxies?
Right now, we have proven using a combination of NIRCam and our sister instrument NIRSpec that we're seeing objects only 330 million years after the Big Bang. And that's not going to be the limit. We only have taken half of our data, and we're still cleaning up some of our analysis. And so I fully expect we'll get closer still to the Big Bang.
How close?
Well, that's the $95 question, as they like to say. And that depends a little bit on Mother Nature, because we can't see an individual first star to form. It would take a telescope 20 miles across to do that. So we have to wait for a galaxy to come into being. And it's possible that we could get to maybe 200 or 250 million years close to the Big Bang, and we'll see if we get that close. But one of the things that's interesting about the ones we've seen so far is that the stars we're detecting in them, I mean, we're detecting a population of stars, not single ones, is that they only appear to be 60, 70 million years old, which doesn't leave much time for them to have formed after the Big Bang.
Let me ask you if you could simply explain, how do you confirm the age of a galaxy?
Okay, well, there's two parts to that. One is that we know the age of the universe with exquisite precision because we can observe remnants of the Big Bang. So we know that the universe is something like 13.76 billion years old. We also know what the speed of light is, and if we measure the distance to one of these galaxies, then we can measure, convert that distance, knowing the speed of light, to a time that light has traveled to us. And that's how I know that these objects are being seen some 300 million years after the Big Bang, because I just difference the light travel time and the age of the universe.
You and your colleagues talk about very distant galaxies having high red shift. What is red shift?
Ah, It's been known for a long time, discovered by Edwin Hubble in the 1920s. The universe is expanding as a result of the Big Bang kind of putting everything into motion. And when something like the universe expands, objects that are distant from us appear to be moving away from us. And when something moves away from us, the light gets shifted to the red, very much like when an ambulance goes by and the pitch of the sound changes to a deeper pitch because the sound waves get stretched out.
So the galaxies captured by Webb are so distant that their redshifts move all their light out of kind of the visible range into the longer wavelengths of the infrared. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And these most distant things that we've found, their wavelengths are shifted by, that we've confirmed so far, their wavelengths are shifted by about a factor of 14, which is pretty big.
What would come after? I know NASA's talked about a new telescope that would be developed to kind of follow up to the Webb. What would that be like?
Well, there are two possibilities. One would be a possibility that isn't designed so much to follow up on these distant galaxies, but rather would follow up on the exoplanet discoveries and actually try to discover an Earth-like habitable planet. So that's one possibility. The other possibility would be a telescope even further into the infrared that would follow up what Webb has found.
How are you focusing? What range? Is there a particular region? And why do you look at a particular region to have the NIRCam focused on?
The reason we chose the particular field that we did is that first, we're looking almost straight out of our own Milky Way galaxy, so some of the gas and dust in the Milky Way doesn't obscure the view. And it's also a patch of sky that has been observed with many other kinds of telescopes. It's been observed with radio telescopes, X-ray telescopes, and so on. So there's a lot of additional information that we can combine with what we see.
How long was the NIRCam in development, Dr. Rieke? I know you and the team worked a long time before the actual launch on Christmas Day a year ago. When did you first start developing this telescope or this NIRCam?
NIRCam itself, we started writing the proposal to the selection proposal in 2001, and we got news in June of 2002 that we would be the team that got to build NIRCam. And shortly thereafter, we started working on the design seriously with Lockheed Martin in California. So from the time we were chosen to be the team to when it actually got launched was basically 19 years.
Wow.
So a very long time.
Oh, my goodness. How long will the Webb continue to send back images? What is its life expectancy?
Well, fortunately, the Ariane space team did such a wonderful job with the launch that very little of the onboard fuel had to be used to get it to L2. And so that fuel is available for what we call station keeping. And so from the fuel perspective, the mission might go 25 years. We just have to hope that none of the instruments break in the meanwhile.
Well, so far so good, right? You're pretty excited about the way it's gone.
Very excited. It could hardly be better.
Well, that's what we want to hear. Dr. Marcia Rieke, always a pleasure to catch up with you. We'll check in the near future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Marcia Rieke, the One of the principal co-authors of a recent NIRCam paper, and of course she is the principal investigator for NIRCam and a University of Arizona Regents Professor of Astronomy. All right, let's talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery, which has out-of-this-world pastries. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. I have rediscovered my love of Mona's cinnamon roll. Oh, my goodness. Had one Sunday. I brought it home. It was huge. Certainly, it's easy. Just cut it in half, and Anne and I were able to enjoy it. There's plenty there when you cut it in half. Open right now for lunch, open for breakfast, 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. They open at 7 on Sunday. They're closed now on Monday, well-deserved day off. Website, monasdanishbakery.com, and there you will see all the great images. Speaking, they're not exactly like what's coming back from the web telescope, but they are wonderful images. Color images of everything on the menu. Boy, how did I get into that one? All right, Shelley Fishman, save me here, Shell. Shell giving me two thumbs up. He is next with our Tuesday Moneymaker Report right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how's your week going?
Oh, the week is great.
Market's looking pretty
market's
good.
Looking good today, yeah. So, you know, the market has built in an optimistic note about the economy, but also an optimistic note about how the Fed is going to back off from some of their aggressive interest rate increases. The market is betting that tomorrow the Fed Open Market Committee will announce just a quarter of a percent increase. And if that happens, the market will continue to be very happy. We're up almost 4% in January.
Mm-hmm.
That
January
obviously cannot continue.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it can continue, and, you know, we'd have a 40% year. That's not going to happen.
I would be happy if Mr. Powell didn't make remarks after whatever.
You know, unless his remarks can be as optimistic economists that around the world. I mean, we got a report this morning that the IMF has now raised their forecast for growth in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
It was just two-tenths of a point. But remember, you've got a lot of gloom and doomers out there
mm-hmm.
who are saying we're going to, you know, go into recession this year. And to a very large extent now, mainstream economists have backed off that kind of pessimistic view. Now, you know, that said, any number of things could happen, you know, with the war, with the pandemic, with you know, global warming, any number of things could happen that could disturb the normal flow of economic data. But if things continue approximately as we see them going, we're going to have about a 2% growth year. Could be a little higher than that. Now, that's not a recession in, you know, anyways,
sure.
way of thinking. 2022, last year, turned out, you know, it came in at around 3%. 3% is not a bad growth rate when you take a look at what growth rates have been over the past 20 years. In fact, the growth rate that was projected and, you know, it caused me to go back
mm-hmm.
to my primary sources and rework the spreadsheet.
Yeah, you've done that periodically here on the show, but it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back, and just to be fair, instead of starting from Truman's first elected term,
mm-hmm.
Which was in 1949, I went all the way back to 1946,
mm-hmm.
which was the end of World War II. Now, what happened in that year is we went into recession because the whole economy needed to pull itself out of war footing and into more commercial and, you know, industrialized normality. And so we did have a recession. So I've added a recession under the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the last time I did this, I stopped at the pandemic because I didn't think it was fair to, you know, charge Trump with a recession caused by the pandemic.
So what we're showing here is how the Democrats versus Republicans do on the economy.
Exactly.
And
so,
the results?
So since 1946, there have been a total of 13 recessions.
Okay.
10 of those recessions during Republican administrations, mm-hmm. and 3 of them during Democratic administrations.
Hmm.
So the Dems get about 23%. The Republicans get about 77% of the recessions. That is not a record you're very proud of if you're a Republican. So you say, well, gosh, I mean, but the Republicans are better at managing the economy, aren't they? I mean, we've always been told that.
Yeah.
Well, so I worked the GDP numbers. In that same period of time, the average increase in GDP during Democratic administrations is 3.08%. You know, about what we did last year.
Mm-hmm.
The average in Republican administrations, 2.63%.
Hmm.
So the Democrats did 17% better on growth than the Republicans. And I'm not going back 5 or 6 years, Bill. I'm going back to 1946. Okay, so that's 55 and 23 and 22. So that's 75 years. I mean, that is statistically relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And so you say, well, what about growth in the stock market? Because after all, you know, I'm a financial advisor, right? So under the Democrats, the growth in the S&P was an average of 8.87%. The growth under Republican administration, 6.82%. The Democrats did 30% better than the Republicans for growth in stocks.
And one administration actually had two recessions.
Or at least one.
Well, yeah, so that was Eisenhower.
Eisenhower administration actually had three.
Three?
Three recessions. And he wound up not doing badly, but, yeah. But you know, it was a weird time. But he had three recessions. The second Bush administration, George W. Bush administration, had two.
Hey, we talked a little bit about the boomers and the post-boomer years last week. We were talking about, well, it has resulted in today's inequality, and there's some resentment. Did you want to follow up a little bit on that?
I do. And what I want to do is spend the time, maybe we can spend a full segment, talking about the way to fix this problem. I mean, it's taken us 50 years to get to this point where the reduction in government sponsored services for the generations that are growing up has been reduced to the point that we now have Gen Y and Gen Z looking at the boomers and saying, you had all the advantages. You had free college, you had the VA benefits, you had all of this stuff. And then you cancel them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so now we have, you know, college debt, mm-hmm. and state universities and even the community colleges are charging high rates of tuition where you guys had it free. How is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tell you, Bill, it's not. It wasn't fair. We shouldn't have done it. But we had this evolution through the 1980s that basically said government is not the solution, government is the problem. And that started a whole tendency to cut back on taxation. And when you cut back on taxation, even if you're creating deficits, there is the natural response that you cut back on services. And the services that got cut back on were services that are needed by you know, generations growing up to support staying in the middle class. And that resentment is that they're now feeling about that is, I think, perfectly well-founded. So what needs to happen is we need to take a look at where the tax rates were the most successful over the past 50 years and find a way to get back there. Now, I understand that saying taxes need to go up is not a popular thing to say. However, there needs to be more tax equity. We need to reduce the disparity between the highest earners and the lowest earners. We need to close the loopholes that allow people who can afford very expensive, you know, tax attorneys and CPAs to tell them exactly what loopholes they need to take. We need to start taxing stuff that we have been very reluctant to tax, like capital gains, so that the people who are making vastly more than 50% of the population are once again returning to a point where they're contributing to our society. in a way that is proportional to their ability to do it. Now, I get it that that is, you know, highly political thing
very
to say.
Very unpopular.
Very unpopular, but we're making some moves in that direction. We've at least now moved toward, for instance, a minimum tax for corporations and a way to reduce a corporation's ability to arbitrage where it earns the money and avoid taxes. We also need to get the tax rate for inheritances back down to a reasonable amount. Today, you can leave $13 million to your beneficiaries, and not a penny of it is taxed. You know, that's an awful lot of money to be exempt from taxation. Not even to mention what happens with the cost basis for things that you bought, saved, you know, held onto for 20 years. Then when it goes to your beneficiaries, they get it at the price at your death rather than when you bought it. So all that capital increase, capital gain, is forfeited by the government. These are things that we need to be doing so that the government can once again afford, without huge deficits, to pay for the stuff that the middle class needs to continue to feel comfortable that the work that they do is going to benefit their kids, and that their kids won't have to look forward to a life that is less I don't want to say wealthy, but less comfortable than what their parents had.
All right, Shell, before we let you go, minimum distributions.
Yeah, minimum distributions have changed. So, you know, it used to be at 70 and a half, if you had an IRA or a 401k, you had to start taking distributions from it. That's no longer the case. There's, if you attained age 72 between 2020 and 2022, your applicable age is now 72. If you attain age 72 in the following years, it's 73. And if you attain age 74 on or after January 2033, then your minimum distribution age is age 75. And in the first year, you can stretch that out till April 1st of the following year. So don't think in the old terms that it was 70 and a half. Consult with your tax attorney or, you know, CPA or tax advisor.
Yep, it is tax time.
It is tax time. Yep. Don't miss the taking the RMD, however, because the penalties are steep.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much, Shell, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Looking forward to it.
All right, coming up next, we have Mayor Rahina Romero in the house. She'll be with me in studio right after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this final day of January. Boy, January really flew past. This portion of our program is presented by our friends at Green Things. Green Things over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You know, the weather has been just spectacular the last couple of days. So there's kind of, do I dare say, a hint of spring in the air. So that means spring gardening over at Green Things. They're in their 53rd year of business. So it's not like they got off the bus yesterday. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. Some of that beautiful imported Talavera pottery that they have over there. I think they've got probably the finest selection of that type of pottery in the state of Arizona. Their website is zocalovillage.com. All right, let's welcome now the mayor of the city of Tucson, Regina Romero, joining us once again here on the Buckmaster Show. Regina elected after previously serving on the city council. She was elected, it's been over 3 years.
Yes.
And she is the first woman and first person of Mexican descent to hold the office since the 1870s. Mayor Romero, how are you?
How are you, Bill? And thank you so much for having me on the first session of this year, even though it's the last day of January. Yep. Can you believe that?
And I hope the new year is off to a pretty good start for you.
It's been going great. Thank you so much.
And this is an election year. Over a year ago, I think you pretty much made the announcement. Yes. Right here on the program. Yes.
We made news.
I like what you said. I like the job. And you said that you were going to stand for another four-year term. Well, this is an election year. And how do you feel about that going into this election year?
I love being the mayor of Tucsonans, and I love the work that we've been able to do. Mayor and council have moved structures in the city of Tucson, changed the way we deliver services. We've taken incredible aggressive stances and action on climate action and resiliency. We are looking at a different way of offering community safety and public safety to our residents. It just has been such an amazing opportunity. And all of this on top of how we reacted and acted to protect the residents of Tucson during the pandemic. It really has been an incredible journey, life-changing for me and my family and my husband.
You were elected like right within months.
Yes.
Before the pandemic.
Yes.
Started. So you're elected in November of 2019, and then the pandemic begins in, say, February of 2020.
Yes, I walked into the pandemic, and the good thing is that I had a lot of experience as a council member. But as the mayor of a city, the buck stops with you, and you have to make very important decisions in order to protect the safety and well-being of your residents. And I did everything I possibly could with the support of my city manager, of my council, of our city attorney, to make sure that we took every possible step to protect our residents. And at the same time that the pandemic was happening, we were really changing the structures of how we offer services in our city, really taking leaps and bounds to act on climate, to act on affordability, affordable housing, and infrastructure. And so in 3 years, Bill, I cannot believe we are in going into my fourth year as the mayor of our city and all of the work, the wonderful work that we've done.
Is Tucson on the radar screen with some of our key partners in the federal government? You were just back attending the U.S. Conference of Mayors event in Washington, D.C., and you've said that kind of your main objective was to bring federal dollars home to Tucson. Is that going to be brought home and made a reality?
You know, our federal partners, the Biden administration and the agencies, federal agencies, are paying close attention to what the city of Tucson, its mayor and council, are doing. Through my leadership and with the unanimous support of my council and with the help of our city manager, we passed a housing affordability strategy for Tucson. Based on that action plan, we've already created a development, affordable housing development company. It's called El Pueblo Housing Development, so that we don't have to sit and wait for developers to build affordability. We are going to take that into our own hands.
What will that
federal
look
government
like?
Is paying attention. Yeah. They're also HUD is also looking at our Thrive in the 05. We applied for a $50 million Choice Neighborhood Grant, which I advocated for the city of Tucson receiving it. They are really looking at our Housing First program. Actually, as a matter of fact, the Interagency Council on Homelessness and a HUD undersecretary came this past week to visit us, learn about what we're doing, how we're instituting our Housing First approach, which, by the way, is not just giving a home or a place for a houseless resident to sleep in. We wrap around services that they need. Many of these houseless folks are veterans. And so they are paying attention to the innovative approaches that we're taking with affordable housing and homelessness. And we're very impressed. They toured the Wildcat Inn and looked at the program that we've creating from the bottom up. The same thing with the Department of Energy and the EPA. They're looking at our climate action and adaptation plan, our EV readiness roadmap, and all of the work that we've advanced to be a sustainable, thriving desert city. And they asked me right then and there if we could be a model city for other cities to follow, because other cities, you know, are struggling to find a way to work on climate action and adaptation in their cities. And yes, absolutely. They're paying attention, and the city of Tucson is ready to implement.
And there's so much issues, and it's not just Tucson, but go to any major city and there's a homeless population. And it's a
yes.
very difficult problem to solve.
Huge.
And certainly we sympathize with our business community that call and complain that there's homeless people that are encamped by their business. It's discouraging business.
Yes.
So how do you tackle that?
So you're absolutely right. One of the wonderful things about going to the U.S. Conference of Mayors meetings, there's two per year, is to be able to share ideas and best practices that other mayors are doing in their cities. And the one thing that we all agree on as mayors is that the issue of affordable housing and unsheltered housing, homelessness, is an issue throughout our country. And we share ideas as to what we're doing. Like I said, our Housing First program is one piece of the puzzle that the housing affordability strategy for Tucson has put in paper of the action that we are taking as a city. But it's happening all over the country. And the one thing is that what we are seeing is that we're acting expeditiously, urgently, and paying attention to the needs of residents, businesses, but also the advocates that are advocating for our unsheltered residents. We have to remember, being homeless is not a crime.
And there are some lawmakers, as you know, in this current session, one of the first pieces of legislation that they would like to introduce is to make homelessness a crime in the state of Arizona.
And that is very, very unfortunate. But I can see the challenges that residents and businesses have. And the city of Tucson is taking really quick action. And we've been doing this since last year. We created a task force of all of the department directors in the city of Tucson that touch on homeless issues. We've invited Pima County to be part of the, and Pima County, by the way, is absolutely a wonderful partner in trying to find solutions for our unsheltered homeless population in the city. We created a tier system to evaluate the services that our unsheltered folks have. We created a homeless encampment reporting tool that any resident in the city of Tucson can use. It's reportencampments.tucsonaz.gov. We created a business resource guide as to what they need to do if they encountered unsheltered resident in the city. We're making great progress against our House America goals. We've permanently housed 244 individuals and rehoused nearly 1,300 people. So we're not sitting on our laurels. We're doing a lot of work and still much more work to be done. But we are lucky that we have a new governor, Governor Hobbs, that has very explicitly said that we have an affordable housing crisis in Arizona and that they are going to take part and put funds to help cities throughout Arizona to find solutions to the affordable housing crisis and the unsheltered crisis in our state.
And before we go to the break, Mayor, the city attorney, Mr. Rankin, is adamantly denying that the city is doing these homeless encampment sweeps at Santa Rita Park ahead of the Gem Show. Santa Rita Park is a downtown hub known for its significant presence of both unsheltered people and social services.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the issues that we are struggling with, right? Residents and businesses want the city of Tucson to deal with unsheltered homelessness in one way. And community advocates are proposing an opposing solution. What I know is this, is that through our Housing First program, with the help of TBD, our homeless outreach team, as well as other departments and the partnership of Pima County, we are treating our unsheltered folks in a humane way. Absolutely agree with our city of, attorney. It's absolutely untrue that we are doing this because of the Gem Show. It is absolute. We do not take action based on tourist issues. We take action based on codes that are being violated. And if we see, based on our tiered approach, if we see that there's public health issues and community safety issues happening in a certain encampment, then we're going to take swift action. And so every single person that wanted services at Santa Rita Park were offered services. We've been dealing for weeks now on offering services to those that were living there. Outreach efforts over the past several weeks have helped actually find some of those individuals, find the resources that they need. No one was forcibly removed, and the city is storing people's possessions if they want them. So nobody has been forcibly removed. We are not doing, absolutely categorically deny that we are not doing any sweeps. We are actually practicing our Housing First approach, offering services and gain their trust so that we can connect them to the resources and services that they deserve.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. More with Mayor Regina Romero right after this. Stay with us.
Two Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. If you're looking for a great getaway, and after the holidays, people kind of like to get away for a few days, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. What a beautiful area to do some outdoor hiking. And yeah, it's a little cool, but that's fine for you out hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Really an environmental hub over there in Silver City. It's a great place to get away, only about a three-hour drive. I strongly suggest before you jump in the truck or the car, visit southwestnewmexico.org for information on things to do, places to stay, and some great places to eat as well in Silver City. But right now, we're talking about the city of Tucson with Mayor Rahina Romero. Mayor, the situation with the police trying to get enough cops, it's not just a Tucson problem. And we had Mike Guyman on the show yesterday from the chamber, and it was Mike's one-year anniversary from being named the president and CEO. And he said that, this shoplifting issue, they've really tried to tackle it head on, and they've gotten great cooperation from Chief Kazmar. It seems like does he ever sleep?
Chief Kazmar.
Does this guy ever sleep? He is everywhere.
He is such a wonderful partner. We share the same vision in terms of how we offer community safety and public safety in our city.
And he knows we're down a lot of cops. I mean, we could use
yes, and unfortunately, again, we talked about this in terms of unsheltered homelessness throughout the country. It's the same thing. It's a phenomenon happening throughout the country regarding many of our police officers retiring and cities throughout the country not having enough time to train the incoming officers. And it's a long training. It's more than 18 months worth of someone from the point that they apply to the point that they're ready as a police officer to be able to serve. But TPD, because of mayor and council budgeting, we have 100 police officer positions that are completely funded and we cannot fill. So I usually like to ask those that are listening to this show, I hope you will consider applying or sharing the information with young people that are ready to serve their community. These are good paying jobs. They have wonderful pensions. And under my tenure as mayor, my council colleagues and I have raised historic raises to our police officers, more than 20%. That's an average of 20% increase in salaries for our police officers.
And you said there are 100 already funded
100
positions?
Budgeted positions.
It just
that
can't
we
find,
cannot find,
find the personnel.
The personnel to fill. And so, you know, we are working hand in hand with Chief Casmore in reimagining how we provide community safety to our community. And we've invested in our public safety communications department, finished expanding $8 million from the general fund, expanding
the 911
communications
Sharon McDonough
building.
Is doing a good job over
we
there.
We are all
We're going to have her on
Director
in the coming,
McDonough,
coming weeks.
Director of Community Safety, Health, and Wellness, Sarah Lanias, Chief Casmar, Chief Ryan, myself, the city manager, are partnering in reimagining how we ensure that we put the right work into the right hands. So we're creating a 311 system that will hopefully go online late spring, which will divert calls from our public safety personnel.
311 would be for information
only.
Non-emergency
calls.
Yeah, because some people call and say, well, my doctor appointment fell through. Can you send a
And not
a
only
paramedic?
That, but for many, many decades, we've put so much work on the shoulders of our police officers.
Yeah.
We're trying to lift those things that are not necessary for a well-trained police officer to attend to, right? Sometimes we will need a clinical psychologist. Sometimes we will need a social worker. And we have care coordinators hired through the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program to take those more complex, maybe, but less urgent calls that are coming in and really reimagining how we provide community safety to our city. And Chief Casmore is part of that solution.
I've only got a couple of minutes left, Mayor. You mentioned something about in your state of the city address, Transform Tucson.
We are creating, and I'm offering this on February 7th. I'm bringing to my colleagues on the council the Transform Tucson Fund. And this is a fund that we're creating with the City of Tucson Industrial Development Authority that is a quasi-government, basically creating a fund that will innovate on how we, the City of Tucson, provide support for startup companies and small businesses in our city. Two of the things that I want to talk to you about that will kick off our Transform Tucson Fund, we are co-locating with the City of Tucson IDA that provides access to capital for small businesses and startup companies. And a program that I created with the help of my council colleagues that is a small business program. We have a small business program manager and small business navigators that are going to co-locate in a building and create an innovative space for our small businesses in our city. And the other piece is that through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, And the city of Tucson 98. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has put $3 million down. City of Tucson 98 is putting 1.5. They're coming to the city of Tucson to put another 1.5 to create a revolving loan fund to small businesses, especially those small business owners that are not typically funded, capital funded, that has the attention of the Small Business Administration. The Small Business Administration is looking at this public-private partnership that we're creating with a promotora model to make sure that we're funding the small business owners that are opening small businesses in our city, and that is about 60% of the job creation in our community. Very innovative, and hopefully something that will change the way that we work with small businesses in our city.
All right, Mayor Romero, thank you very much.
Great to see you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for having me here.
All right, that'll do it on The Buckmaster Show, our Tuesday edition, final day of January. On behalf of Mayor Romero, Bill Buckmaster, and my buddy John on the other side of the glass, saying, hope everybody has a great afternoon.